Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that's him. It's gonna get you some.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm your host, Damon Bolte. Hope everyone had a really nice holiday break. I sure did. Still recovering from my crazy food coma days. But that's all right. That's why we take off for the month of January. But we're going to be back. And speaking of that, this being the first show in January, I'm glad to have a good buddy of mine, Rosser Lomax, head bartender of The Third Man, a new bar in the East Village in New York City. Welcome to the show, Rosser.
Thank you very much, Simon. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great, man. Good to have you here. So, we were... the last time I think that I even saw you, we were working together at a Fratelli Branca three-story event.
Out in the West Village, yeah. That was it was kind of a crappy rainy day like this one, but it was a...
Wait a minute.
Quite a party. Oh, yeah.
Do you have your coin on you?
Of course I do.
So, that was a cool party because we got to represent some of our favorite brands and make some cocktails, and they gave us these awesome Fernet Branca challenge coins. So if you're out there and if you have one, be warned.
Yep, we're coming for you.
We're coming for you. You're going to owe us some shots of Fernet. So this is a recent switch for you. I believe we met when you were working at the Huckleberry Bar, which we've talked about a couple times on the show before.
Wonderful spot, yeah.
Great spot.
I was there for a little less than a year from December 11 to just into November of 2012 when I got the offer to take the position of the Third Man. And, I really would have loved to stay on there. It's a beautiful place. But it was one of those sort of offers you couldn't refuse sensibly.
Mm-hmm.
And I went ahead and took it. people still ask me if I miss that place. And, of course you do. Like,
yeah.
Anywhere that felt like home is going to be something that you miss a little bit.
Well, speaking of that, I mean, like, it's a, one of the places where it does feel like home. It's kind of the quintessential, like, neighborhood bar, a modern neighborhood bar.
Absolutely. And Huckleberry Bar, I was a patron there for years before I actually worked there. So you can really see how the bar, the service model, has really changed to reflect that neighborhood's evolution over the past 5 years and change. I worked the fifth anniversary, and everybody who's like, yeah, I was here from the small days, you could tell that they were there when East Williamsburg was still roughing it, before the classy whiskey bars and before the gourmet pizza rolls in. Like, they were there for, people would get beat on the sidewalks.
Yeah.
Which is something I have still seen on Avenue C from the Third Man, but it's that idea that it was like a neighborhood safe space that had these wonderful ambitions. The quality of the beverage program is what really drew me to working at Huckleberry Bar, because I think Stephanie has a phenomenal palate and really, she really cares about what kind of products she offers and how. And, that was really ambitious 5 years ago. And it's still reflected in the character of that space where, I can still pull Bud Lights with one hand while I'm making, two different stirred drinks with the other.
Yeah.
And that was a lot of the fun of, like, Saturday night service over there.
Nice. And, some of the other things that set that place apart, too, is, like, first of all, like, I went there, like, when it opened, yeah, I guess I remember hearing about it when it first opened and going in, specifically to go have cocktails. But over the years, I slowly went from those stirred classics to the buds. But that's because, you can. It's just the same way with, like, we've talked about, like, Bushwick Country Club, which is down the block from you guys. On the same block, actually.
Yep.
Practically
neighbors.
And yeah.
I certainly didn't close my bar at, like, 2 or 3 in the morning and then find myself sitting drinking Fernets and High Lifes.
Yeah.
Well into the hours when you should go home and
yeah.
be useful.
Although I think we can all relate to that one.
Definitely, although I've never been served after hours.
That sounds fun, but I've never been there.
I don't know what that's like.
But, you know, it's the same kind of thing. Like, you know, when like Nick Jarrett and Frank Cisneros and those guys were working there at Bushwick Country Club, you know, you could go in and get a great cocktail, but you could also have your Bud Lights and Fernets and whatnot.
Yeah, sure. With the right people, you can still get, I mean, if they have the equipment on hand. Because there's so much overlap now, especially now, where Tom has gotten in with Frank and they have their little empire cropping up. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of interchange between Bushwick and Dram and Gin Palace, and you know, so it's actually kind of nice. It's nice to see that evolving as a paradigm for serving new cocktails. Like, yeah, we can make you absolutely anything you want. Three Jennies, awesome. You know, crack them all open and that'll be $10, $12.
Yeah.
Like, that's... I've been thinking about that a lot, and that's part of what I'm trying to do at the Third Man, is have an accessible list that isn't... Because, you know, I'm classically trained. Like, it's bitter, it's stirred. Like, that's a good thing for me.
Yeah.
Some people may want something a little lighter or something more approachable, or they can't pronounce Chinar, and that's fine. Like, nobody does in their first try.
No.
But you want to have the kind of place that's accessible to them. And... There was discussion had for a while, and I'm still in support of it, of having Bud Light Platinum as our house beer, and just being like, yeah, you can have everything you want, including that.
Yeah.
But it's such a tightly curated list because of the storage that we have going on at the Third Man. You know, what you see is what you get, more or less, when you walk in the bar. So the tight rotating list that I've been running lately, like, those are functional adaptations to the practical realities of the space, which is, it's great learning that sort of thing.
You know, I talk sometimes on the show about that, like liking, you know, the like different challenges that are involved with running a bar and even with just making drinks on their own, you know,
of course.
You know, like you said, like having a tight space is a challenge in and of itself. First of all, if you can only get one person behind the bar on a busy night, sometimes,
Lord,
you can,
yeah,
really be screwed. But, you know, like you said, not having like storage space to have everything, you know, you want to kind of approach it like, we have something for everyone, but not everything for everyone.
Yeah. So I think, and I envy all those spots with the big beautiful back bars where, like, it may be a few steps off, but you can get me six kinds of Amari and, like, we can have a nerd conversation about that.
Yeah.
And I have two. And they're in one particular place on the bar, and that's where you have to go to get them, because that's what we can fit when you need to have, you know, a number of different spirits and different styles to have something for everyone, but not everything for anybody.
Yeah. And I think, you know, especially, you know, we talk about things like, or, you know, for instance, there's the, getting a little, I was going to trail off there for a second, but... We're back. there are, you know, websites like, we're talking about like the 12 bottle bar, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those, like having those guidelines and those parameters that you have to stay within is a really, really powerful thing for like anyone who's trying to create drinks.
Yeah.
It's both empowering and it's also...
Well, creativity and restrictions, they like each other much more than people like to think.
Yeah.
You know, I remember my days in college. I went to school for music, and I thought it would be like this great creativity fest where you could like express yourself as an artist. And I actually did my best work under the tightest constraints.
Absolutely,
because you know, yeah, you have to do it this way and then this way. But what are you going to do then with the handful of choices you're presented with?
Mm-hmm.
And the 12 bottle bar is it's a great blog because it's giving people the idea that you don't have to have everything to get all these interesting classics. You don't have to have, you know, chartreuse to be able to pull it off. I strongly suggest that you do, but
right,
you know, you don't have to spend $52 on a bottle of liquor just to get, you know, it lowers the barrier to entry for a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, then you think creatively. Like a lot of my favorite drinks, we ran a hot cocktail briefly and it was mulled cider with Chinese fine spice powder. Mm-hmm. Myrto and Fernet.
Sounds like everything that I've had today.
It was what was in my kitchen when I was trying to figure out drinks, and like I made that for myself. I'm like, this actually might have legs.
Yeah.
You know, it's what's in the house. Kitchen cocktails.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's also, things like Amore Amargo, for instance. They don't even have citrus. So it's
right.
That's a huge constraint to be put into. You know, like, they don't even have a shaker in the house, you know?
Yeah, everything is bitter and everything is stirred. And that's perfect for a certain crowd of people. Mm-hmm. And they get away with it because of their relationship with Cienfuegos and Gin Palace. Mm-hmm. You know, Gin Palace is my favorite place to be on a Saturday night for Schadenfreude. Because I love Haim and I love Will and I love going there, you know, if I get out early and there's still an hour left of the evening, just to look at the look on their faces as people are like dancing on the banquettes and you're just like, you are, how many of those gin and tonics on tap have you pulled tonight?
Yeah.
You know, the one subsidizes the other in a way. But it's nice that versatility is there in that block too.
Yeah, absolutely.
So people can kind of come in on a weird night. Maybe they've been to Ginger Palace with their friends, but they can get a really well-made aviation, and then the rabbit hole just opens.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, like, I would never say this to Frank or any of those guys, but it's almost like the cocktail bar food court. That corner there.
Sure, sure. I mean, and you can think about that in a positive way, because I've been to some bitchin' food courts in my life, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... So who's McDonald's?
I'm not saying. That would be the Cherry Tree Tavern or whatever.
Oh God, that place is a glorious, glorious little spot.
Oh my God, the last time I was there, I almost got in a fight with probably every single person in the bar, including all the staff and the door guy. And all I was trying to do was order a beer.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. Oh man. Well, so speaking of those chains, I mean, like, what are some of the restraints that what are some of the restrictions that you have, for instance, like what are the ones that come to mind?
With the list I'm working on right now, you know, I had a lot of liberty in terms of how I built and interpreted the list, and part of it is very deliberately all one or two steps away from a very classic cocktail. Because, you know, my owners, they have extensive culinary background, they're restaurateurs, chef owners, but they're not from the cocktail tradition. We get a lot of press talking about how very Viennese our bar is, and aesthetically speaking, and in terms of our wine and beer selection, emphatically so. But there's not the same cocktail culture in Europe, outside of maybe London. Madrid has its gin and tonics, but it's not like, you know, and they have wonderful sherry, and they have great food ways and drink ways, but... I just use those words. I'm sorry.
Fine. We can edit it out in post.
Yes, please, please. Wait, aren't we live?
Yeah, we are.
Sorry. So
I didn't mention that.
So they have these great drinking cultures, and they have incredibly affordable, high-quality wines and beers that are native, and they've worked on for hundreds of years. America developed the cocktail because we were making really bootleg-ass whiskey.
Yeah.
And you have to do something with it.
You know, that's an interesting point. You know, for us over here... Like, you know, we've mentioned Fernet and then, like, mm-hmm. you know, sherries and things like that. You know, a lot of the European drinking culture, when they come here, they're like, what the fuck are you doing with our beautiful Amari and Grappe and sherry and, you know, wine and beer?
We stuck turbochargers on it, painted flames on the hood, and then went drag racing.
It's America.
That's what we do.
That's true. That is true.
That's the styles.
Yeah. And, you know, that's all right. It's all right.
Yeah, and that was a real challenge for me is having drinks that would pass muster with the investors who are not, well, when explaining what a mezcal last word was. Mm-hmm. And that's one of our more popular drinks because it's that with a shot of champagne on the back.
Nice.
And I love that drink. It's called the Harry Lime, the third man being the Orson Welles film that Orson Welles starred in. Our opening night, I served those to Tristan and Robbie from Booker and Dax. And Tristan's comment was, shouldn't every cocktail come with the champagne back? I was like, yeah, I don't see why not.
That's awesome.
It's one of my favorite things. But that's kind of nice because you can chase with it if you're not a big fan of the smoky mezcal. Or you can float it in the drink. It totally changes the texture.
Make it a royale?
Exactly.
Nice.
That's one of the things I always did to my last words. Just being, you know, if I was behind the bar, if I wanted to sort of blow somebody's mind or... impress a cute girl, I'd be like, oh, try this great drink. Oh, it's spicy. It's well-balanced. Now watch this.
Yeah, we put champagne in everything here.
Champagne goes in everything, if only once. I learned well from the Rain's Law Room from my time there.
Nice. Well, let's take a quick break, and when we get back, we'll continue talking with Roster Lomax, head bartender at the new bar, The Third Man, in New York City. Back in a moment.
You're listening to Brothers NYC on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
And we are back. You've been listening to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte. In the studio today, we have my good buddy, Roster Lomax, from The Third Man. We were just talking before the break about some of the restrictions and challenges of having a small bar and some of the ingredients that, you know, you take one out of the bar, you might find yourself a little bit more creative than feeling like you've been left behind the old booze bus.
Well, that's always the worst feeling when you think to yourself, like, oh, great, you know, we have to 86 this cocktail because, you know, we didn't get whatever limited supply ingredient it is. For me right now, that was Mezcal in the Mezcal Last Word, and we're having some distribution issues with Zubrovka. And I've got a Zubrovka champagne cocktail on the list, which is there as a very blatant sort of like, oh, you wanted to have a glass of the Gruner, but we could probably talk you into a champagne cocktail.
Sure.
With elderflower and vodka.
Yeah.
You know, so sometimes you have to make accommodations for what you do or don't have. And with the Mezcal Last Word, the Hairy Lime, just this last weekend, you know, I really wanted to run it. It's a good drink, and we had all the ingredients on hand except for the Mezcal. So we substituted in white tequila and pulled the different modifiers back, kept the acid roughly the same. And to try and get, you know, the difference, you know, mezcal and tequila being kissing cousins, to bring up the two characteristics that stand out from the mezcal I was using, which is the smoke and the salt, I brought in like a bar spoon's worth of peated Irish whiskey. It also gives that nice like heavy body to it because it's pot stilled, mm-hmm. So you get a little bit of the peat smoke, and then we just threw a pinch of sugar in there. Salt, white crystalline thing that's totally legal, whatever. A pinch of salt did wonders, both because mezcal is kind of naturally salty, but it also brought up, you know, when I was working at Huckleberry Bar, we used a saline solution in a couple of drinks, usually with more adventurous, more bitter bases, because your perception of taste is altered sometimes by salt. Hervé Thys, probably mangling his name, but he had a lovely book called Molecular Gastronomy, where he ran short bits on different sort of the phenomena of taste and variations and the way that science really fundamentally interacts with food and culinary things. And one thing he pointed out was that a little bit of salt will tamp down or diminish your perception of bitterness in a beverage or in a food, and it will amplify the savor and the sweetness a little bit. It's one of the classic, like, when you have, Mexican candy is a little bit salty and chilly because it amplifies the sense of sweetness in the candy itself.
Yeah.
Which is, it's kind of an acquired flavor maybe for Americans who are used to like high fructose everything.
Right.
You know, where we're weaned on like sugar first, which is always great when you get people who come in and they don't want sugary drinks.
Sure.
a buddy of mine was like, I love when people say that because I know they're lying. They want something sweet, but they don't want it to be saccharin.
Right.
Which is fine, you know, because that saccharin flavor is, to me, it's an off flavor. But there's nothing wrong with sweet forward.
Sure.
You know, it's just another flavor group.
And again, you know, sugar is another palate stimulator, just like salt is.
Mm-hmm.
So, and, you know, you have to have, like, a lot of times that, even just like a bar spoon of simple syrup in a cocktail will add the body that you might be missing from.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it gives it'll round it out, even if you're using something particularly heavy, like an Amaro mm-hmm. or something as your base. It just really ties it together, like a rug. We'll bring a room together.
Absolutely. Yeah, so I like the idea. I am going to try it when I go back to my bar now, of doing the last word, smoky, salty last word. I think that's a really cool idea.
Yeah, it's a fun little drink. I mean, I'm far from the first bartender to put mezcal in the last word and declare himself king of shit mountain, but the little bit of champagne back, I think, is the twist I liked with that drink. And I have the opportunity because, you know, my owners are not ingrained in cocktail culture that I can do that. It works. It goes both ways too. One of my drinks on there was an American Trilogy variation, using Laird's Chinar and Peychaud. Sort of a tip of the hat over to Tanya Dram, because that's still one of my favorite things, is the house shot over there.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And I pulled that off, and, Eddie, the managing partner, chef owner, was like, well, we have all these fresh juices that I had made for you at our commissary uptown. Like, what if you paired apple, you know, the apple brandy with fennel? And, you know, instantly I recoiled, because I was like, you don't put fresh vegetable juice in a stirred drink. That's wrong. And we're like, oh, well, we could clarify it, or we could do this. And I just went ahead and did it, and tried a couple different values and settled on about a half of an ounce. And it's delicious. It's weird, and it clouds up the mixing glass, and the drink on the other end looks a little funny, you know, for what you would think a stirred drink would be.
Mm-hmm.
But the depth of flavor from the fresh vegetable juice, which is not something I would have thought of on my own, and didn't, in fact. But it's nice to have that kind of collaboration,
yeah.
Working with people who have great palates but don't necessarily come from cocktail.
Absolutely, and it's I know it's a lot of restaurants and bars, like the back of the house and the front is, there's always an issue with
never the twain
along.
Shall meet.
Yeah, but it's always great when you have a dynamic combination like that, you know, because mm-hmm. there, like you said, you know, there are certain things that you wouldn't have thought of, and vice versa. And also, when you do need something clarified, it's nice to not have to do that from behind the bar.
Yeah, they have the all the toys usually.
Yeah,
and I had a great relationship at Rye House with the former chef over there, where I would just come in and I'd just have like just a stupid idea, and I'd be like, so how terrible is, you know, pulling out a torch and you know, I want to melt some sugar on these apple garnishes for a hot apple cider drink that I'm making just this weekend. So I had this wonderful leeway on the brunches over there where I could kind of just do whatever.
Nice.
As long as the place didn't burn down, it was good. So I did Bad Science Sundays. Where I'd have my friends come by and I'd just try new, weird, whatever things. And, that was where that was sort of the version of the Amaro hot toddy, hot cider drink came from. And I would get an apple and I went down to chef and I was like, I'm trying to burn simple sugar onto here so it caramelizes. And she's like, I could spend all day telling you why that's not going to work, or we could just do this. And she threw them on a sizzle plate, the little apple slices. No, she threw them on a sizzle plate.
Okay.
And put down some brown sugar and powdered ginger and hit it with a brulee torch. And I was like, that's probably a much more efficient way of doing this.
Yeah, like, nice.
Thank you. You know, and you learn a lot that way in terms of, like, maybe flavor pairings that, you know, we think of because we think of how they work in cocktails, whereas they're like, well, you know, I used to put lavender in my Bloody Marys over there. Like mezcal, smoked chipotle, lavender Bloody Marys.
I can't even picture that.
It's delicious.
Really?
Something about lavender and nightshades go together really, really well.
That sounds crazy.
And when I get my smoke gun behind the bar over at Eddie the Wolf, or rather the Third Man, when I get my smoke gun, we'll be going weird places with that.
Yeah, it sounds awesome. Let's get weird.
Yeah. It's part of the joy.
I mean, yeah, especially having like one of my favorite things to do is actually go back to the kitchen and talk with the chefs about like certain flavors that go together like that, because you know we all know that brandy goes really well with ginger and orange, you know, and of course, you know, and absinthe and peyote and rye go really well together, you know, and you know you can make the connections of like raspberry, chocolate, mint, you know, like salt, you know, you can.
Mm-hmm.
These are like classic pairings, you know, like classic flavors go well together, and it's really awesome to be able to find those new weird ones, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a copy of the Flavor Bible, and it's a great go to when you're like, I have no clue what I'm like. It sort of shows you your blind spots when you're developing a new set of flavors or a new cocktail, or alternately, when you say to yourself, like, I'm gonna work dill into my drink, one way or the other. It's going to give you a list of things that traditionally go with dill, and you can kind of walk that back. I ended up pairing dill, cucumber juice, and grappa. It was actually grappa ruta originally. It was the drink that I did for the Fratelli, for the Fratelli Branca event, which is great because rue flavored grappa is one of those things that, you know, it's part of the rich Italian history of like having a really interesting local tradition of like, well, we have this herb, it's super bitter, super stimulating. It was a metonym in Victorian English, like you'll rue the day comes from that herb, which is why the drink is called Nessun Rimpianto. It's no regrets. Nice. But I just love a good pun. Also, I employ Josh Perez, so puns abound. But yeah, you know, rue flavored grappa is not an ingredient I would have thought to have ever made a cocktail with until Jen came and was like, you know, will you do this for, you know, our event? And I had a bottle and I messed around with it for weeks, actually. And one day a flash of inspiration hit me and I was like, I could just make like a crappa Collins with honey.
Nice.
Because it's such an interesting flavor, it's so different. You know, it's got the heavier body of a brandy, but it's super bitter and stimulating, almost in like a gin sort of way.
Right.
That doing as little as possible to it was great.
Yeah.
And then when I entered, and I was doing the test kitchen stuff with my owners, they're like, "Oh, cucumber would probably go well in there." I was like, "Well, why not?
Nice.
Put it in. Throw the dill on top." All of a sudden, it has this like a depth of flavor like a good salad, and it has a lot of vegetables in it, but it doesn't taste, you know, it doesn't taste too vegetal.
It's more like garden.
Yeah, it has those assumptions without actually being food.
Yeah.
You know, which it's nice. It makes for a very light drink.
The step above the soil, not below it.
Right, right. Although I'm more than happy to try and explore those flavors too.
Yeah.
That really like musty, earthy thing. Okay. But that could be kind of a turnoff for some people with booze.
I don't know.
It's more of a your third drink kind of thing.
Yeah, I don't know. Unless you get people like me at your bar.
In which case,
I'm always going to go to that menu and look for the weirdest thing on there to try first. And speaking of which, you're going to be there tonight, right?
I will, in fact, yeah. Tonight's Friday through Monday. I'm there most days.
Yeah, it's usually how it goes with opening a new place, right?
Absolutely. Of course, it seems to be that, you know, I take Tuesdays every now and again, and those are the nights I get all the texts from everybody being like, where are you? Like, drinks are great, but we're looking for you. And I'm like, I didn't leave the borough. Although yesterday I did for that Google party with the...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The hardcore lockdown Google party?
I mean, I understand why they have so much security there, but that's... You know, I've been in government facilities that were less secure.
Wow.
you know, that's more like they have cameras everywhere and fine. You know, they'll find you if they need to find you. But you know, they were all about like direct physical control, which was fantastic until I realized I didn't have pineapple juice.
Oh, no.
And then it took me about 45 minutes to go an avenue and a block over the Manhattan Fruit Exchange and be like, please just give me my pineapple juice.
And then let me back in. Please. Yeah. I swear I'll get you drunk.
It was great to have, really top quality bartenders doing this, you know, just batching and doing everything in this tiny little corner of this cafe and being like, yeah, we probably should have used the kitchen for all this, but not knowing I could have. We were just like, okay, a great event. It's like a pop-up party. You know, you come, you saw, hopefully somebody else brings the product. You just set it all up. Bang it out. Everyone has a great time. Smiles all around. Everybody gets paid.
That's awesome. Yeah,
that's one of the things I love.
Yeah. Well, cool, man. It's been really great talking to you on the show today.
Oh, yeah. Thanks so much for having me.
I can't wait to come see you at the bar and get weird.
Yeah. Let's get weird with it.
Right on. Roster Lomax, thank you so much for being on the show today. What's thank the website for you. The Third Man?
I believe it is thethirdman.com. Our digital presence.
How did you get away with that? How was that not taken?
Like I said, I'm not entirely sure. I'm not too up to date on our digital presence because I'm busy trying to keep the lights on.
Right on. Cool, man. All right. Thanks again so much. Oh, you've absolutely. Been listening Thank to the Speakeasy. I am Damon Bolte, and we will see you next week. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.